Welcome to Uncharted, an Arctic 360 podcast about the impact of COVID-19 on the North American Arctic. All summer long, we'll talk to the people who live, work, and govern the Arctic to understand how we move forward from this moment in history. Today's theme is tourist season cancellation. From cruise ships to small tours, everything has been put on pause for the 2020 tourist season. What does this mean for the locals and the people who run these tours? This week, I sit down with Peter Garapik, who is the Director of Industry Relations at Quark Expeditions and has over 30 years of experience with the Canadian Coast Guard. Quark has been operating small commercial tours in the Arctic and the Antarctic for 30 years, but Peter started just a few months before the COVID-19 lockdowns. We talk about navigating this immense disruption, what it means for locals, and how the industry moves forward. I'm Erica Wallace, and when it comes to COVID-19, this is Uncharted.
Hello, Peter Garapik. Nice to have you on today.
Thanks, Erica. How are you?
I'm pretty good. All right, so we're talking about the impact of COVID on the tourism industry up in the Arctic, and I was hoping that maybe you could sort of take us back to pre-COVID times before we start. Like, just how big of an industry is this in the Arctic, and what factors does it include, and how does COVID sort of impact everything up there?
Sure. You know, as Canadians, we think of the Canadian Arctic and, you know, the 50-some communities, you know, mostly Inuit, right mm-hmm. across the Arctic, all along the coast, in northern Quebec, Labrador, North Labrador, and, of course, Nunavut, Northwest Territories. So that's an amazing place to go and see, you know, the geography, the environment, the people. But, of course, this industry looks at the entire Arctic, right around the top of the world, which includes Greenland, Iceland, Svalbard, which is very, very far north part of Norway, islands really deep in the Arctic Ocean, the Norwegian coast as well, but of course Russia. So the industry is large, it's varied. It's similar in some ways from, you know, around the top, and it's very different in others. And of course, I'm most familiar with the Canadian area because I've spent time there in my career with the Coast Guard, Canadian Coast Guard. And it is unique in that there are, as I mentioned, almost 50 communities all along the coast, spread across the entire Arctic. And of course, there's channels and inlets and islands, and it's incredibly remote, very isolated, difficult to get to, and geographically different from, you know, from one end to the other. So it's just beautiful to see and visit. But it's also very environmentally sensitive. You know, you mentioned pre-COVID. It's hard to think pre-COVID because it's so distant, it seems now. But the industry, and especially Quark Expeditions, my current employer, we always held it very, very high priority is community engagement. And that's one of the reasons I came to Quark. You know, they were so smart in terms of sustainability with the environment, and also, you know, the community engagement part, where very sensitive to the people who live there, whose, you know, communities were not meant to be tourist meccas. So, you know, when we do set foot in the Arctic, we do so that it's well planned. We have the permits in place to be there, but we also have the buy-in from locals. And ultimately, we want to give back to the locals in terms of maybe some programs we can bring to them, or at least ensuring that they're involved in where we go, what we do. And we've even hired local Inuit in Canada to work with us both in the Arctic and the Antarctic. So that's what it was like before COVID. It was very integrated. It was really enjoyable to meet people, see places, be part of the network in the Arctic and the Canadian Arctic again I'm speaking to. But now you can talk about what it's like today with COVID, and the door is completely shut as it should be in the Canadian Arctic.
Right. So the Canadian cruises have effectively, they've been banned until October, right? Effectively ending the season. I mean, what does that mean for the locals that you usually interact with?
Actually, I believe from cruise ships in Canada, say from Vancouver to Halifax, St. John's, and those places, Quebec, were banned in July. I think that's extended now.
Right.
But it was fully closed. The doors were closed for the season, for the Arctic. And we know we can look at the remoteness and isolation, the lack of infrastructure. They just not want to take a risk. There's been zero cases of COVID-19 in Nunavut, so they've done it right. And I suspect there's been zero cases in most of the Inuit communities because they try to, you know, maybe northern Quebec, Nunavik is maintaining a ban on any travel to their communities from other places in Quebec and so forth and in Northwest Territories and Northern Labrador. So yeah, sure, there's an impact on individuals. The communities aren't seeing us. We are not buying any materials, local, you know, crafts or goods, any permits we would take out and pay for aren't being taken out or paid for, so there's a reduction there too. We might use airports with landing fees to bring people in and get to our ships. We'd use local guides and interpreters, so none of that is happening. So I would say, like everywhere else, the tourism industry take a real hit, and there's people just not making the incomes they used to make.
What fills that place when they have, you know, not the tourism industry to fall back on?
If I had that answer, I'd probably be working for the Prime Minister, the Premier, whatnot, of all those places. That's a really good question. Not much. It's, again, with the isolation, the lockdown in our north, very little is coming and going out. So there's nothing replacing tourism per se. Around the world, though, everybody's trying to open up some level of tourism. It comes with its risk, and everything we do at Quark and with our industry and our competitors, it's all about risk mitigation. How can we do this that ensures it's safe for our passengers and safe for communities where people live if we go to visit? Now, the Antarctic is a little different. That's the season's upcoming there in our winter, their summer. And while we fly into ports of departure in the south when we visit the Antarctic, there's no communities. There may be some research stations, they may close, but there's no communities like there is in the north. So limited impact there. And again, the same issue is what do people in the tourist industry do in lieu of planes landing and people visiting? It's going to be the new normal, and we're figuring out what that's going to be. And it seems to be everybody wants tourism to return. Mm-hmm. It's got to be based on science, of course, and certain levels of risk that are acceptable to everybody.
So you started working at a tour company just before lockdown, right? What
yeah,
has
my
that
crystal ball, like? My crystal ball wasn't working very well.
Sorry?
What was it like? You know what? It's an amazing industry. People who work in it and people who pay to be part of it and travel just love the environment, love cultures, love traveling and exploring. And when you get to either Arctic or Antarctic, it's usually on people's bucket list. It changes your thinking. Mm-hmm. And you really go home thinking, wow, I got to live a little differently, or how can I do this differently? And we need to do things better for our planet, because you're really seeing these isolated places that haven't really been touched by humans. And you see how it was and what it could be. So it was a great industry. It still is and will be again as we work through COVID and get to the new normal. We'll see what that's like. Is it going to take excellent and accurate testing, or is it going to take a vaccine that is effective and is able to be applied across the globe? I often think, boy, this could have been the year that I expected, and it's not. With anything, especially in operations, you say, okay, this is what's been thrown at me. As a mariner, this is what's been thrown at me. How do I keep the boat afloat, and how do I get through this? And that's what we're all doing now.
Right. Well, it's funny you brought up the environment, because I was actually going to ask you about that as well, because, you know, obviously cruise ships are, now I know you're at a smaller company, but cruise ships are sort of part of the problem when it comes to, you know, warming oceans and pollution. And so I was just wondering, you know, in the wake of COVID, with a lot of high-profile outbreaks on these ships, what do you think is the future for these big cruise ship operators? Like, is it kind of time to rethink the industry?
You know, it's hard for me to comment on the big, because I'm part of the small. And when I say small, most of the ships in our industry have 200 passengers or less. And the reason that's 200 passengers in the Antarctic, you can't do any excursions or landings if you have greater than 200 passengers. So all the ships are designed to keep that amount. So when you go ashore in the Zodiacs to see penguins or colonies, other places, research station, it's, you know, 100 at a time. Usually, with a bunch of Zodiacs, and you come back and go. But anybody over 200, you're not landing, you're just cruising. So we're expedition voyages, while the other big ships are cruising, they'll pull into a small community such as Ushuaia or Punta Arenas and land there, but they can't land otherwise. So we're at 200 passengers, maybe 100 and some crew. If you wonder what the future is, you could look at Quark Expedition's future ship. It just came off a slipway and the shipyard in Croatia 2 weeks ago. It is so forward-thinking. It's just phenomenal in the systems it has in terms of propulsion, fuel efficiency, waste control management, and the oh, I'm going to mess this one up, but it's MEGS, and that's MEGS, how to burn your trash so it's nothing, just a waste that 10 garbage bags could be a baggie. Through scrubbers and just initially burning the garbage, it turns into gas, burning the gas again, and then it goes through scrubbers and out the stack. It's just things like this, and that's the future, to be incredibly sensitive to the environment, keeping the numbers low, and just doing it right. And IATO, which is the International Association of Antarctic Tour Operators, and IECO, which is the Association of Arctic Expedition Cruise Operators, they have a lot of guidelines that are all about getting close to wildlife or not getting close to wildlife, and where you can go north and south and in all ways. It's check out those websites. AECO is IECO, and IATO is IAATO. And you'll see that this industry works under some very stringent rules and I think does things right. And it segues really nicely. You know, we talk about the environment, but it's very, very high on our list is the people and the communities. And I think we're doing things right there. And especially, again, back to the Canadian Arctic, you know, with the Canadian government really putting a high on its list is reconciliation. And over the past, almost 4 years now of this government, it has seen the Inuit really take control and influence what's affecting them. So one case is the Inuit Marine Monitoring Program, IMMP. Okay. And while we, the Coast Guard, and I should say we because it used to be me, but the Coast Guard and Transport Canada knows where all the vessels are all the time in the Arctic of a certain size, the larger vessels, not pleasure craft and stuff, unless they volunteer to put on their AIS, their Automated Identification System. The IMMP allows the Inuit to know what ships are coming and going, where they're going, and also to engage with these vessels and say, wait, we don't really want you to go there at this time of year. You should go here. They also work with us, with the Coast Guard and where the icebreakers are going and when they're going to break ice, because when the ice is broken, it's no longer a highway over the water that was there for the local people to use. So it's really every day, every year, really well in the Arctic, Canadian Arctic, and of course the Antarctic, but specifically, as I mentioned, it's in the Canadian Arctic.
Right. How does Quark specifically try to sort of honor those commitments to reconciliation? Do you bring a lot of Indigenous voices on board? Are they incorporated into your, if you have a board of directors?
I'll speak to our community engagement program, and that's where we will go before the season, meet with the community, tell them, be sure they know who we are, what we want to do, how we operate, be sure that they are familiar where we want to go and that we have their permission, just both formal and informal, to go there. We have a program where we put funds back into the communities in terms of just supporting local groups or activities. We've also have guides on board. I mentioned, in fact, a couple through IECO, there's a training program for guides to interpreters to be on board. But we went so far as not just to have them join us on our voyages in the Arctic, but they helped us do work as any other employee would in the Antarctic. So we're trying to really provide opportunities for locals, not just temporary, but long-term ongoing. So that's the type of stuff that Quark has done. I really was really attracted to Quark because of their commitment to both the environment. If you go to the Quark website, you'll see the sustainability strategy, which is far-reaching, just not just in ships and operations, but a follow-up for passengers afterwards. but also their community engagement. It's doing things right. I guess I'm going to say that a lot. I really feel that we're doing things right. And our minds are open, and we're listening to improve if we can improve.
Right, for sure. I've heard a lot of talk about, travel bubbles opening between provinces to sort of expand out the reach of tourism and sort of promote, like, local growth there. I was wondering how that plays into your sort of planning for the summer beyond, and if you think that's a good start for, opening up tourism, or if there's other...
Well, actually, I should say that Clark, I'd say about 6 weeks ago, we made the decision to cancel our Arctic season.
Okay.
So we will not be going to the Arctic. Obviously, no one will be going to the Canadian Arctic this year.
Right.
And right now, nothing is really open in terms of Greenland and Iceland. And in Norway, as of last week, is just opening up to cruise ships with a lot of ifs and buts.
Mm.
First of all, you have to be a Norwegian coming from Norway or Nordic countries such as Denmark, not Sweden, because their policy was no
right.
COVID lockdown. So there are really, really big constraints on travel. Greenland wants to open too. Iceland is talking about opening, and the airports, they are open as June 15th today. And you can go in, but you got to have a test, and you got to be tracked. And so they're starting in small steps. But we felt, weeks ago that it wasn't going to be a viable season because of the lockdown, because of the lack of access. Not only Canadian Arctic, but otherwise. And so many other operations have canceled their Arctic seasons already, and some are still waiting to see if they can squeak out some end of season. It usually starts in June at the earliest. Svalbard in Canadian Arctic starts late July through August, September.
Mm-hmm.
But, the big question that people have is, well, maybe the ships can get there. Maybe the governments will let us in, but will the passengers want to travel? And can they get from their countries to the port of destination? Can they get through without quarantine? Can they get on our ships? And the big question is, can we ensure a safe voyage, with all the risks considered and mitigated? And can they return? So there's so many ifs, ands, or buts with COVID-19 still. So we'll have to see what happens. But we canceled our Arctic season. So we're looking forward to the Antarctic, what we call the 2021, starts in November, runs through till April.
Right.
And we'll look to see how we can make that viable. But the issue is going to be access to countries and airlines that will fly people from their homes to, ports of the departure. And of course, that risk of, can I return home? Can the ship get back if something goes sideways? So that's what we're all working on, in every tourist industry, not just the small expedition cruise industry.
Well, those seem like really easy problems, so
I'll go. And the challenge for all of us is, like everybody else, we're just waiting. And, we're listening to science and the decisions that are made by governments. Usually it's based on the science, but, what level of risk is acceptable and manageable? So we have to day-to-day wait and hear and listen to see and learn what we learned about the science of the virus.
Right. I guess on that note, I'm wondering how much of the guidance, from the federal government in Canada itself, were there really strict rules put in place, or did you kind of impose your own rules on yourself? Like, do you know if there are other companies that are continuing to operate this summer?
No, Canada shut right down. That was government imposed early on. I think the Canadian government recognized how remote, isolated, and the lack of medical infrastructure in the Arctic, it was a huge risk of people coming in. And so they shut it down. This is June, I think they probably shut it down in early April.
Right.
So that wasn't us. We were certainly the industry, again, TriEco, which is just a superb association that represents all of us in the Arctic cruise expedition industry. They have great guidelines. They were looking at how they could do things differently and are currently doing it. They've worked very closely with Svalbard, a Norwegian, area, and they're working with Greenland, too, to see how can we open this up slowly and see how it works and build on our successes and respond to if there's any failures, and failures being bringing COVID on a ship or having it on a ship or bringing it. And that will be the slow baby steps we take moving forward.
You touched on the sort of lack of infrastructure in the Arctic there, and I was just wondering how you feel about the sort of the lack of infrastructure. Like, how does that impact the ability for Quark to operate in the Canadian North, even without COVID? And does that deficit make responding to COVID even more difficult?
Quark, again, these are small ships, so they're not your giant cruise ships with infirmaries and doctors and nurses. So every ship we have has two doctors. There's the ship doctor, and then we have a Quark doctor who's part of the expedition, who goes on land, goes on the Zodiac. So there's always two doctors on board. Every ship does have a small infirmary. Different companies put different things on board. But the way we would manage risk is, number one, it's screening. And even before COVID, you're screening for people's health and people's fitness. And, you know, when they leave their house, you're saying, you know, are you fit? Because we simply can't look at going north or south with somebody who might have medical problems we can't deal with, which lead to a medevac, where you rely on, in Canada, it would be the Coast Guard and the Air Force, which ultimately brings them to a hospital, probably, you know, in the north, a nursing station, and that's all that most communities have, or a hospital in Yellowknife or in Nunavut, Iqaluit, and then, you know, south from there. So the key is to be self-sustaining as a vessel. So screen to be sure you don't have a problem, but if there is an accident or an unanticipated medical situation, deal with it the best you can. But other than that, you are looking at medevac. And all of our passengers have medical evacuation insurance built into their fare. So if we get them ashore and they have to be medevac by either Air Force if they come up, or if it's the government of it with their medevac services, it's covered. So that's what we try to do to be sure we're not going to cause any pressure on the already limited infrastructure in the Arctic.
Right. Yeah, that makes sense. Sort of bring it all back to tie it all up with one more question. We were talking about how the industry moves forward from this and sort of, you know, what we're going to learn from COVID. What kind of, you know, new innovations would sort of make you most excited, you know, with regards to the environment or reconciliation, different vessels, you know, best case scenario, what do you see as the best changes coming out of the COVID era?
I think number one, awareness that whenever you're in a small space, a cold can infect everybody.
Right.
So hygiene, I think, is going to be the key. You know, we've all heard about the buffets. Buffets are probably done around the world. There was this great Japanese experiment. I don't know if you saw it. It was a video. Academics put it on where they ran a buffet and they put infrared dye of some sort on an individual's hands.
Okay.
And no one washed their hands. They went to the buffet. And mm-hmm. at the end of it, of the, you know, dozen people who were at this buffet, the individual with the coating on his hands, which was heavily coated, so it's not like a typical virus, had it all over his face and his body, and it was all over the utensils and table, and other people had it on their hands and their face. So it showed how things can you know, pass from person to person. So buffets are definitely changed. They could be served buffets where the food is there. You go to see it with, you know, splash guards and sneeze guards everywhere, where a server mm-hmm. will build your plate for you and hand your plate off. Or it could be a buffet with prepared meals. You come up and pick up your plate that's covered and walk away. So hygiene on board at meals, hygiene, you know, cleaning. Cleaning will never be the same. Surfaces are going to be cleaned. Electrostatic sprayers will be used on planes, on ships, and cabins. Laundering will be, you know, a higher regard to everything about hygiene, being cleaning and personal hygiene. I think we'll all be more familiar with our physical spacing. I can't imagine anybody would sneeze without covering their nose with a tissue, handkerchief. Well, maybe not handkerchief, because that goes back in your pocket and touch your hand. So I said tissue, or into your elbow, and then washing your hands. Will we always walk around with hand sanitizer now? I'd say the biggest wake-up call for all of us is hygiene. We've always looked at people oddly in other cultures wearing masks, and often it was for pollution, air pollution. But it truly was they were protecting others from themselves in case they sneezed or you know, involuntarily spat while they spoke, as the Prime Minister called it, speaking moistly, which is, if you ever see somebody with the sun behind them, you imagine what, you know, you can see when we use an S or a P or something that like that, we do spew some moisture. So that's, you know, how much will masks be normal in our everyday society. And it's also good to see that it doesn't have to be a surgical mask. It could be a fabric mask we make or one you buy. Or now we're talking about neck gaiters or buffs or whatever you want to call them. You know, more of the thing that you can pull up around your face. Maybe there'll be pockets where you can put in a coffee filter and remove that, you know, as required. So I think that's going to be a neat thing to see how we change with each other here in Canada, which is pretty open, you know, and relaxed society. It's how we change when it comes not just with hand washing and other hygiene, but masks.
Right. And just caring for each other, too.
Yes, exactly. Being respectful and helping. And, hey, the grocery store. Don't squeeze the price, right? Don't touch what you're not going to buy.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to me today. It's been really interesting. I've been really curious to hear more about, you know, just how much the tourism industry, you know, has been impacted by COVID and what sort of steps to take towards the future. So it's nice to have a conversation about, you know, possibly the nice things that will come out of this as well.
Yeah, and it's going to be some changes for sure. And as we look at opening up, say, the Canadian Arctic in the coming months, and we're looking for the next season, which is next year. You know, we'll certainly be working with the authorities, but without a doubt, the locals, the people who live there, and be sure that they see what we're all doing and they agree with what we're doing, and that they're satisfied, we're satisfied, and we can get back to what we call normal.
Yeah, well, when that happens, I'll be booking a little tour to the north, because
I hope so. I can't wait. I want to get back there too.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you so much for taking the time today.
Thanks, Erica.
Okay. Bye, Peter. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
That's it for today on COVID-19's impact on the tourism industry. And a big thanks to Peter Garapik for sitting down with us. Stay tuned for next week when we take a look at how a Yellowknife company centers Indigenous people and values at the center of the practice. See you then.